You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche, and I have an employee from the Kodiak Island Borough here with me today. Could you introduce yourself?
Sure. Bud Cassidy, retiring borough manager.
All right, great. Well, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it. So you are retiring very, very soon.
Yes, as of Wednesday. So Wednesday will be my last day. So I am, and then catching a flight on Thursday morning, weather permitting, to go on vacation. So.
Oh, wow. Where?
It's imminent. To Mexico.
Really?
That's not just leaving the island. I'm leaving the country.
Whoa. You went all the way. You're like, no, it's too small for this large event of retiring. I must leave.
I must leave. Actually, I have the opportunity to sort of babysit our new grandson. So our son-in-law and our daughter Molly and us are going to Mexico. So we'll be babysitting, and they'll be probably doing all the things that folks do in Mexico.
Where
and at resorts. Oh. It's between Cancun and Playa del Carmen, a little resort in between.
Hmm. And so what resort is that?
I can't recall.
It's okay. I went to resort when I was a little too
Club Med. I take directions. No, not Club Med. So my wife makes these kind of arrangements. I just take directions well as the T-shirt that I'll be wearing quite a bit once I'm retired.
Yeah. That could be a very different experience for you because you've been in this responsibility-heavy kind of position for a while.
Well, I can go back to when I was 15 years old, my dad had come home for lunch and saw me sitting on the porch and said something to the effect, you know, you need to go downtown and look for a job because they're not going to be knocking on your door and asking you if you want a job. So, you know, I've been working since I'm 15. I'll be 62. So between 15 and 62, I put in my fair share of hours. And let me mention, I worked in at King Crab, and I remember one week they had 96 hours of work. So we were pretty proud of the fact that we put in that many hours. I think we were making $3.83 an hour at the time. But so we were sliming fish and putting salmon in half-pound cans and cooking them and then taking those cans and putting them in boxes and on pallets and then loading them into vans to ship out of here. So a lot of labor intensive at the time, maybe less than labor intensive these days.
What is sliming fish?
Oh, just so the fish come on in and there's a machine that actually guts them, but there's that bloodline in the bottom of the fish that you need to clean out, or sometimes the machine doesn't do at least at the time. It was called an iron chink at the time. I'm sure they have more. The technology has advanced quite a bit since then, but it just sort of gutted the fish, and you just want to make sure all the guts as well as the bloodline was completely removed. So that was called sliming at the time.
And so you did that in the 60s, you said?
Yeah, did that probably in about 1968. In fact, I talk about that's the first time I've seen my wife. Robin had started working there, and I remember they were going out for lunch, and I say that she turned my head then, and she turns my head even today. So even though we had nothing to do with each other until the 80s, that's the first moment that I had met Robin. We went to high school together.
You did?
We ran with different crowds. She ran with the Joan Baez, iron your hair, part your hair in the middle crowd. And she said that I was a jock only because I was looking for a way to get off the island and, you know, running cross country or playing basketball was that opportunity to leave. So
good job getting off the island.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. You know, so we had a run to East School from the high school, and whoever got to East School, if we were taking seven, the first seven people would who crossed the finish line would get to go. So I was number seven. If it was 10, I was number 10. If it was 15, I was number 15. So I really didn't care for cross country, but it was a way to get off the island. And
so you were a runner.
Well, I was a basketball player at the time, and so cross country was a good way to get in shape.
I've heard that for other sports too, that cross country is kind of like the backup sport, keeps you fit.
It's grueling. I mean, obviously, what Marcus Dunbar and all the exceptional folks that he's trained have changed that, but changed that concept. But back then, it was the loneliness of a cross country runner. It was pretty, pretty dismal. Running up Pillar Mountain, we didn't do things like that. We ran, it was called the Loop, from the high school out to Reznov, Benny Benson, and back to town. Coach Floyd called that the Loop, and that's what we did in the 60s and 70s, yeah.
Did you say you went up Pillar Mountain?
No, they go up Pillar Mountain now, but uh-huh. We didn't in the day that I ran.
Oh, I thought you were describing going from the school up Pillar Mountain around.
Well, I think they do that now. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know for a fact, but these are elite athletes now. Oh. I think we were probably not in that class back in the 60s, 70s.
Hmm. Yeah. I didn't imagine anyone could run up Pillar Mountain and then go back down, you know, put in another 2 miles in there. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I have goals now.
There you go.
So just to give people a kind of an overview of your service in the borough, because not everyone knows that you've been in the borough as an employee for like roughly 30 years, right?
Sure. So I worked for the municipality of Anchorage as well. My degree is really in land capabilities, in geography and geology, but really it was on, it's called geomorphology and land capability. So I worked in what was called physical planning at the municipality of Anchorage, and we did things, I was involved in avalanche mapping in Eagle River and down Turnagain Arm, which was pretty exciting. The idea at the time was to identify where avalanches started and where the runout zone was, and that was important if you were going to locate a subdivision or build a residence, that you don't build in these areas. So we mapped them, and it really got to be such a hot topic because it was restricting private land ownership that the Assembly at the time chose not to adopt the work that we had done. I think, unfortunately for the Assembly in Anchorage, was they're still liable. They had the information, so if they allowed someone to build there and there was destruction or maybe even death due to an avalanche, I think they would be held accountable to some degree. And then I was commercial fishing here at the time, and fishing with Ron Jolin on the Fayette. I fished with him for about 8 years, and I'll say that Ronnie's really made me probably most the man I am, because he was a hard worker. We were pretty successful, and he had a lot of patience. And I like to think that I've taken some of those traits from the fishing grounds to the office. But I would go up to the Kodiak Island Borough, and coastal management program was just starting, and I met Linda Freed, who was a relatively new planner at the time. I think she was funded through the coastal management plan, and we would talk Kodiak and we would talk planning and mapping and those kinds of things. And as it turned out, about a couple years later, there was a job opening, and Linda was in the position to hire me, so that's how I got back to Kodiak. And that was in 1983. Actually, it was Halloween in 1983, because I remember costumes, and was surprised that the staff down here were actually a little more liberated and would dress up in costumes. But so I worked there from 1983. I actually left for 2 years. Worked down at Kodiak Oil, down at the dock for 2 years, and then came back. But total service with the borough is about 30 years. And in that time frame, I was the resource manager. Really is a job that dealt with the ownership of land. By virtue of being a borough, we receive 56,500 acres. That's a number that's going to be indelibly ingrained in my mind for the rest of my life. That was our entitlement. And so we had to perfect the title. And so I was busy working on identifying and perfecting title to borough land, and borough-owned land from Shewiak down to Sitkanak. So a pretty active time back then. Then there was the oil spill in 85, and Jerome Selby worked his magic, and the 26,000 acres we owned on Shewiak actually was sold to the trustee council. So the borough had this $40 million, I can't remember the exact amount, windfall from selling borough land. And I, to this day, that's probably one of the projects that my involvement, I feel probably most proud. It was pretty productive. And when you have those sort of victories, or wins or successes, you feel pretty good about going to work the next day, those kinds of things. Then I left for 2 years, and I came back as the borough's engineering and facilities director. And the work I primarily did during that time is our schools were in pretty tough shape. You know, once you build the facility, really the maintenance starts the day you get the keys. And our schools at the time had leaky roofs, some leaky windows, so needed a paint job. So I probably spent a fair amount of time working on contracts to have roofs repaired, to have the outsides painted, just sort of spruce up the area. Then we also started talking about a new school, so spent a fair amount of time planning for the school across the parking lot here. Left in 2007 before construction of the school started, passed the baton to another individual who took that position so he could work on building the facility, and went over to the Community Development Department. Spent about 7 years at the Community Development Department working on planning kinds of issues. Until there became a vacancy at the manager's position. And at first I wasn't interested. I was pretty happy where I was at. We were doing some good things in the planning department. We actually brought up a number of really good candidates. I drove around and showed Kodiak to two of them and was pretty impressed with their qualifications. But as it turned out, they were not interested in Kodiak. They were interested in the free plane ride and the hotel, all expense paid vacation to Kodiak. So that really disappointed me that folks would do that kind of thing. And because of that, I was mad enough to say, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring, and served as borough manager for about 3.5 years now. And as you say, it's a fairly stressful position. Stressful because we were working on an $80 million school. We were working on a $31 million landfill wastewater treatment plant, a landfill expansion. We were actually had put together a land use code change, which, as we know, the public wasn't real thrilled with, and so we never made it much further than that. So the job of the manager isn't just orchestrating with other departments. It's really a working position. We don't have the luxury to just be None of the directors have the luxury of just being managers. We're all workers at the same time. So, I was just talking with our payroll person, and I've got, 1,500 sick leave hours that I didn't use, which translates to 37.5 hours or something, or months, excuse me, weeks, 37.5 weeks of sick leave that I didn't use. So, you know, I'm obviously a fairly durable employee, but I'm thinking back, thinking, you know, maybe I should have taken a little mental health day here or there, because I will say that position, all positions are stressful, but I think I've reached my cup runneth over with stress, so I'm really looking forward to the next phase in life.
Yeah, from what I observed, it seemed like you worked like the regular day, and then you would go to regular meetings and work sessions.
Yeah, there's always a fair amount of evening meetings, and regular meetings at night, work sessions at night, joint meetings, budget meetings. There's no shortage of evening meetings. I think, thinking back, I'll be able to reclaim my mornings, to a certain degree. I get up at 5. I'm an early riser as it is, but I won't have to get up at 5 anymore. And, I won't have to go to night meetings. I'll be able to sort of reclaim my evenings. And then weekends, I've always dedicated one of the days of the weekends to the borough, so I'll be getting my weekends back. So, I don't know what I'm going to do with all my time, although my wife has a kind of a 30-year honey-do list. I'll be ticking those off. But I don't know if I'll ever get to the end of that list. I'm sure more will be added on to it as I'm scratching off certain projects that need to be done. So, but I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to maybe a little physical labor. I've besides spinning or hiking, I've probably been sitting on my rear end a little bit too long.
You could probably get back into jogging. You have that background.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I'd, yeah, my knees don't allow for jogging pillar. Anymore. Yeah, I can hike up pillar, but yeah, I can't tell you the last time I ran. I refuse to run anymore. I'm saving my knees for future hikes.
That's probably wise. And for those who aren't familiar with the regular meetings and the work sessions, the last regular meeting for the Borough Assembly went from 6:30 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. So that's one of the longer. That's the full amount of time you can spend in a meeting. But, you know, the borough manager has to be there. That's his role, is sitting at the table in the center and kind of summarizing things and keeping things like shipshape.
Looks like you got the qualifications to be a borough manager. So,
I'll leave that to you guys. I already go to those meetings. I see what kind of job it is. It's very intensive.
Well, there's some important issues. The Assembly's got some big ones left on their plate. I mean, marijuana, what they're going to do with marijuana is going to be, it has been real time consuming, and they'll be spending a fair amount of time on it, continue to spend a fair amount of time on it. Just the budget. Budget's going to be challenging. There's less money in Juneau, which translates to less money in Kodiak. Fisheries revenue isn't what it used to be, so this is going to be a challenging budget year. There's no doubt about that. There's also hospital renewal lease that they'll be meeting on here shortly. We're proposing a lease to extend the lease over on Near Island to the feds at the aquarium building. And then there's putting out a new RP for garbage collection. So there's no shortage of work to be done. I mean, the work's always ongoing, but these are some mega projects, I think, to some degree. But you can argue we just got done with some mega projects. We just got done with an $80 million high school project and a $32 million wastewater treatment plant. So the plate has been full for many, many years and obviously continues to be full.
Yeah. Well, both the city and the borough have gotten some criticism for waiting so long on the marijuana opt-out decision or marijuana task force decision. Can you give some insight into how this issue was postponed for so long?
Well, I don't know if it was postponed as much as people needed to get a good understanding about what it meant. It's pretty complicated because it really addresses four different aspects to the marijuana. It's the growing, it's the manufacture, it's the retail side of it, and I'm missing one of them, but and there's zoning regulations, and there's just other borough regulations that that you know involve something that's been illegal for so many years. It's legal now, or at least it's been illegal at the federal level. It's been legal in Alaska for a while, but this is a whole new game, I think, and maybe the traction was a little slow. But I think the Assembly's been dedicated to address what they see needs to be done. And you can, you were at the meeting the other night where they're creating a task force to try to have both folks pros and cons on that task force and decide. And I heard about maps today being made that identifies churches and police stations and other places in the 500-foot buffer around those things and maybe extend it to 1,000 foot. So there's a lot of work to be done, and we may be late to the game, but I think all systems are running hard to try to catch up.
Yeah, I think that also Alaska is very unique in that we have all these different kinds of districts and we're isolated, and there are just a lot of different cultural and also district and also this, there are just all these issues to consider. And is it true the city has its, well, the city can come to their own regulations separate from the borough?
Well, interestingly enough, at the next joint work session, I should say, marijuana, between the city council and the borough assembly, marijuana is front and center on that discussion. So they'll be able to address those kinds of issues. I don't know all the ins and outs of the marijuana rules and regs. And I know the city has brought their attorney in here recently, and we brought in the director of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. It's called Alcohol and Marijuana Control Board now. So that's important that we brought down these caliber folks to Kodiak to talk about it, because there's just some real questions that haven't been answered yet. And so, yeah, I think folks should keep their eye out and attend the joint work session between the city and the borough coming up.
I mean, there have been so many interesting meetings recently just bringing up those questions. The director of the Marijuana Control Board came, and she talked about that, and she talked about the different regulations that are specific to Alaska. And then a lot of the assembly members and other people had questions about what was specific to Kodiak. Would the city and the borough be separate? And just to think about it, marijuana could be legally sold on one part of the island, and then just a mile later, it could be slightly not allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
Those borough and city limits are held like that.
Yeah, and that's why I don't think folks can really converge properly without having a map.
And definitely.
Folks are now making one, and will be available at that joint work session. And so we don't have to talk conceptually. We can really just point to the map and have lines drawn, and we can talk more specifically about where things can occur.
That work session is next week, right?
I believe it is. Yeah.
But don't trust me on that one. Look, you can find the list of meetings online on the Kodiak Island Borough website, but also the City Council website, because it'll be a joint work session.
Sure, and it'll be advertised in the paper and on Facebook and those kinds of things. We try to get the word out.
Yeah.
By radio and and newspaper as well.
Yeah. And looking back, what was the transition you took from kind of working in more industry jobs? Like you mentioned fisheries, and you mentioned oil. So how did you transition to government?
Well, so commercial fishing was a way to go to college, and I graduated, as I said, with a degree in geography and a minor in geology, and really got into land capability. So worked on things that involved steep slopes and wetlands and other sensitive lands. So there, I remember there was a juncture in my life. I was either going to work for an oil company or for government, and I was really trying to decide which way to go. And the land capability side really was pointing towards government. Coastal management was coming into play, and really that was all about looking at our coastlines and our resources adjacent to the coast and identifying them, because you know, a lot of our bays and inlets are just nurseries for a lot of open ocean resources, as well as near shore shellfish, crab, shrimp, those kinds of things. So we're identifying the value to these things that probably previously had limited value. And we were talking about preserving them. You know, we're a fishing town, so we really do need to look at sort of the complete life cycle of fish and shellfish and protect those areas that are critical to their development. I mean, the idea is to make sure there's an availability and there's enough numbers of critters that we can harvest them and keep our processing plants working and our processing workers working, and taxes to both city and borough government. So that's the direction I took. And worked for Municipality of Anchorage, like I said, in land capability. It was avalanches, so that really cemented it for me. I came down here and probably took a more general. It's a small organization, and you wear many hats. So I did everything from zoning enforcement to zoning case law to, as I said, getting surveys done around the exterior boundaries of parcels that we had selected. And I think the borough's done a pretty good job of trying to dispose of land that didn't have steep slopes and wetlands and those kinds of things. That's become a little more difficult now. I think the easy low-hanging land has been sold. Now I think there may be one or two or 10 lots or parcels around, but then you start getting into lands that are more sensitive, you know, over steep and slopes. And if you look up on the Pillar Mountain, you'll see a number of existing landslides or historic landslides. Those are caused by over steep and slopes, and those are probably places that you probably wouldn't want to sell. Wetlands don't provide places to put housing or septic systems. Their value really is in things such as flood control, or you may have salmon in some of those wetlands, those kinds of things. So that's the land capability side of what I learned and what I was passionate about, and why I chose government, I think, over working for the oil industry, which is really probably the permitting side of things. There's a lot of permits involved in oil development, and that's where I would have gone if I would have chosen the oil company tract.
So speaking about oil, what stopped me during your kind of summary of your career and what you're proud of is you talked about the Shuyak Island sale. Could you talk a little bit about your experiences with the oil spill?
Well, let me step back a bit and talk about, I'm a commercial fish for 10 years, and it's what was able to get me through college and provide me with down payment for a house and probably a wedding ring, those kinds of things as well. So when the oil spill came, I think there was just real concern about what that meant. It was a real uncertain time. Exxon at the time had their hands full in Prince William Sound and really said, as I recall, that the oil would never get to Kodiak. Well, we know that wasn't the case, and there's a number of shorelines, primarily on the west side, that got actually hit pretty hard. But it was, there really was a sense of panic here in town because the fishing seasons were closed, and obviously that's how folks make their living here in Kodiak. As I recall, and you're talking about a few years ago, there was the availability for fishermen to actually go out and sort of help collect oil, help prevent oil from hitting certain beaches, and since so many people were out of work, we had meetings at the auditorium. It wasn't just meetings in the assembly chambers, meetings in the auditorium to give contracts to folks to go out there and, you know, collect dead animals or set out geotextiles to try to prevent certain critical areas, high habitat areas, from being oiled. I remember people getting log booms, grabbing logs on like a Fog Neck Island and actually curtaining them with geotextile, which absorbs oil but allows water to pass through. I happened to be stuck in the assembly chambers, and we were coordinating a number of things. I remember trying to get all the shrimp nets around town that have been probably sitting idle for a number of years, and sending those out to vessels, and they would actually go through the oil spill with their shrimp nets. And the reason for that was to break up the slick and to provide more surface area. The idea was more oxidation would occur with more sides to the oil. So they broke the oil slick up, and what we ended up having at Kodiak was, I think we call them moose patties. So they were, if you think of like a cow pie or something like that, they were washing up on our beaches because oil had been separated. I was camping with my family on the north end of Woody Island at that time, and the kids were playing on the beach, and I remember them coming back, and they had actually oil on their clothes and on their hands. And we went to go take a look, and we found a few of those moose patties that had drifted down to Kodiak. One of the things I also remember was we had all kinds of folks showing up in the assembly chambers, and they had all kinds of gimmicks to clean up oil. These are people flying in from all around the world coming to Kodiak, and we had one gentleman that had a bunch of waterfowl feathers on a piece of fabric, and he had a beaker of oil, and he stuck these waterfowl feathers in the beaker, and they actually absorbed all the oil that was in that beaker. So it was a good cleanup method, but all you could think of is all the waterfowl in the Barren Islands and around Kodiak that once they were hit by the oil slick, they really didn't stand a chance. Their feathers would absorb that oil. So it was a pretty heady time. We eventually were transferred out of the assembly chambers and back to our regular jobs when Exxon came on down and took over the Exxon Vico took over the sort of the cleanup duties and the coordination duties. I will say that most of the people that I met from Exxon, you know, the corporation really did a bad thing. There's no doubt about that. But I was impressed with the people they sent on down to Kodiak. They were very human. They put a face on the company. They were very concerned. They were embarrassed. They donated to KMXT. I remember them coming back with KMXT T-shirts. So they really did try to as best they could anyway, contribute to the community. But it was just a heady time, uncertain. People had major loans for boats and gear that they had purchased. Crew members weren't sure where they fit in because if the boat owner wasn't go fishing, they just were not going to be able to make a living. So it was a difficult time.
Well, thanks, Bud, for joining us today. I really appreciate it. And we're out of time, but congratulations on your retirement.
Thanks. So I told the assembly the other night that the next time you see me, I'll have more dirt under my fingernails because I'll be learning. I got into gardening 3 years ago, so I'm trying to perfect the perfect Kodiak tomato. I'll probably be hiking quite a bit since that's a latest passion that I have, and probably volunteering as well.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for tuning in to Talk of the Rock.